is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session shares my conversation with candidate for town council, Melanie Hamblin. This is one of a series of conversation with candidates for the Franklin election on November 2nd, 2021. I do this to provide Franklin, Mass. Voters with accurate and timely info that they can use to cast an informed vote. Publication of the answers or interview responses does not constitute an endorsement of this or any candidate. We cover the candidate questions as previously developed in conjunction with the community, you, and shared with the candidates in advance. Five of the questions are general in nature. The sixth is specific to the role of the candidate, in this case, for the town council. Our conversation runs about 29 minutes. So let's listen into my interview with Melanie Hamblin. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR.FM, anywhere on the internet in your browser, and 102.9 in the local Franklin area FM dial. Today, in the studio for another candidate interview session, and with this time, we have current town councilor and candidate Melanie Hamblin. Melanie, thank you for taking part today and welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for inviting me to give my interview and for everything that you do for the community. Really makes a huge difference, helps us get information out, and it helps with the transparency of what's going on in Franklin and in the government. Your quarterbacking sessions, I really like those a lot.
You like those?
Yes.
Good.
And the interviews with the town administrator.
Yeah. The Talk Franklin sessions have been good. I'm looking forward to continuing those, and I hope Tom gets reelected. So, or at least if somebody else wants to take that place, we can continue to the quarterbacking sessions because I think those, are beneficial.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it condenses the meetings. I mean, respectfully, not everybody's going to want to sit for, a 2-3, sometimes 4-hour session, but they still want to know. Yeah,
exactly. Sometimes I think, well, maybe I'll just listen to Steve.
But you still have to go through the session in order to do that.
I know. It's okay. It's a really good thing that you do that, so thank you.
Thank you. I love doing it. So as long as we continue to do so, as I've said before, Franklin matters. So for those who may not know, who's this Melanie that Steve's talking with? Tell us a little bit about your Franklin story and tell us about your life here.
Okay. So my Franklin story started in 2010 when my husband Neil and I moved to Franklin from Westwood after my son went off to college. We were looking for a town on the train line so that I could take the train into Children's Hospital where I worked as a lab manager. We were also looking for a town with a nice downtown, an awesome library, more space, and a lower tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
We did get some help deciding where to live from a colleague of Neil's. Neil was the boys' track coach in Westwood when Michaela O'Neill Hava was the girls' coach. And he remembered that Michaela grew up in Franklin, and she agreed that Franklin would be a good spot for us. And her mom, I think a lot of people know Donna O'Neill out there, still lives here in Franklin, and we've become very good friends. Donna's the food pantry expert, and I think she's a legend in her own time. She's just a wonderful person.
Yeah, one of the many hidden stars, hidden gems of Franklin, so to speak.
Yes. And after 30 years in research science, it was time for a change. So after I had a couple of jobs, I was trying to figure out which one fit me the best. And I think what we ended up doing is that we, in 2016, we bought the Franklin Agway. And we wanted to be able to actually be in Franklin every day, to participate in what goes on here, to volunteer, to get to know the people, and to become part of the community. So I ran for my first term on the council in 2017 already. Seems like a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm now running for my third term. In December of 2020, I used my retirement account to purchase a property where we spent the year before we owned it renovating the house. And we've saved almost 15 acres of open space. So I am in Franklin. I have put my whole life savings into Franklin. And who needs a retirement account, right? I mean, come on.
You got land you can live on now.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to keep it. But so that's my Franklin story. And I hope you find that interesting.
And as we're preparing for the elections, mm-hmm. participating in elections is certainly one of the key freedoms of American life, and voting is one of those primary responsibilities of citizens. So while a law does not require citizens to vote, voting is an important part of any democracy. So what can you tell us about your own voting record? And if you have not been an active voter, please tell us why. And the real question is, how important is it that we elect people who are active participants in the election and government process?
Okay, there's a lot of questions
there.
Yeah,
it's a big question. It's a mouthful. I apologize.
It's okay. Well, I can remember my mom bringing me into the voting booth in Lexington when I was young. At that time, the voting machines had those type of levers that you have to flip.
Yes.
And then there's this big handle.
The big hand crank.
And you have to crank the big handle.
Yes.
So that you could get your vote tallied. And then the curtain kind of opened up.
The curtain opened after you did the poll. Yes.
Yeah. Ta-da. But I can remember being so excited when I turned 18 and I could go pull the handle myself.
Yes.
Right? That was so exciting. I would also bring my son to vote with me when he was little, and he was really upset because he turned 18 a day after the 2008 election.
Ouch.
And he had to wait to vote. He really wanted to vote. My own voting record, I try to vote all the time. I didn't vote in the 2015 municipal elections here in Franklin. At that time, both Neil and I, we were changing our jobs and trying to figure out what to do. And we were jobless. And we were thinking maybe we couldn't stay in Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
That we would move and find a job somewhere else. And basically, we were both very depressed.
Hmm.
And I didn't vote. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't mm-hmm. read about the candidates or anything. But life has turned around.
That's good. It's good that it has.
Yeah. And so, you know, we know a lot of people don't participate in local elections. There's 20% maybe of the...
Approximately do. Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of averages out about that.
Yeah. I think 17 to...
17, 18, 19. We've had a couple of 21, 22s, but
okay. Yeah,
the general rule that I've had, at least from my experience in reporting, has been, you know, ballpark 20% for a local, ballpark 40% for an override, ballpark 60% for a state level election, and ballpark 80% for a presidential election, mm-hmm. which, as I've said in other spaces too, you follow the money. Clearly, there's much more advertising dollars at the state level and at the federal level,
right.
and thereby everybody's aware about it. There's less dollars because, oh, by the way, the town council, school committee, those are very high-paying jobs.
We're
no money there, so right. there's no advertising other than signs. And unfortunately, that's the most impactful vote we have is at the local election.
You just made a good point that people should know that these are volunteer positions.
Yes.
We don't get paid
no.
to do this.
No.
But, you know, I do ask people a lot, why don't they vote in municipal elections? And I found two main reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is that there's no one new to vote for.
Mm.
And that was what spurred me to vote to run in the first time.
Okay.
Okay,
yep.
the first session. That's the reason why I ran the first time.
Sure.
And number two is that it doesn't matter. Like, why should it matter? So I think that people who want to throw their hat into the ring have figured out why voting for Franklin matters.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's horrible if people running don't have a perfect voting record.
Mm-hmm.
If people running can bring in more people to vote that have never voted before.
Correct.
Then I'm all for that.
Yep.
And we all learn at different times. Why is it important? You know, so I would never say that people who don't vote shouldn't run.
Hmm. No. No. And the candidate, well, the questions, and for the listeners, some, you've heard some of this before, especially if you're regular listeners. For the new listeners, welcome. But the questions, at least the first five of these, are the standard ones that go across all candidates. They were crowdsourced earlier this year. So people had an opportunity to submit their questions. Some of them almost word for word made it into this batch of five. Some of them got tweaked a little bit with my own experience in tweaking, but they're not meant to be yes or no questions to begin with. We want to hear what you're thinking about, which is why they're somewhat wordy. But I think that's, I mean, the devil's in the details, and there's a lot of nuances, and we want to let the platform, i.e. this audio, you tell your story so we can say, oh, this is what Melanie said, this is what so-and-so said, this is what so-and-so said, and make a decision. That's the best way to go, I think. So, yeah, that's what we're doing. And we'll use that to segue into kind of the third topic, which I know has also created some conversations out there as well in terms of the public health and in COVID-19 in particular. So have you been vaccinated for COVID-19? Do you think there should be a mask mandate in Franklin if it comes to that? But really the significant question there, the major question, is what measures should government take to protect the public from the virus? And how should these efforts be delineated between local, state, and federal governments?
That's another
mouthful. It's another big mouthful, too.
Okay. I'm going to tackle this.
Bit at a time. That's the way to go.
Yes, I am vaccinated. I'm someone that has tried to keep my staff, my customers, my family. My dad is 95, and I have a 9-month-old granddaughter, and my community safe through this pandemic, and I couldn't wait to get vaccinated. I feel it's my duty to make sure that vulnerable people and children who can't get vaccinated are protected from this pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I asked the Board of Health for a mask mandate in Franklin in early 2020 before the governor put one in place.
Mm.
It was early on when we really didn't know much about the virus, but it seemed like one route of transmission was through the air. So we put a mask mandate at the store. And we were sworn at, spit at, had things thrown at us for months, multiple times a day. It was brutal. I still can't get over it.
Yeah, sorry to hear that.
I believe that at all levels, the government's job is to keep people safe.
Mm.
It would have helped last year to have a federal or state indoor mask mandate so we could run our business and we and our staff didn't have nightmares every night. At least we wouldn't have been targeted as a standout. I think if the positive cases go up, an indoor mask mandate should be used as a tool against the spread of the virus. I understand that some people have medical reasons to not get vaccinated. And if you are not vaccinated, please let me know. I will wear a mask around you. I do not want to get anyone sick. I think this past 18 months has shown us that when we make healthcare political, we all lose. I mean, do you know that according to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, that COVID was the number one cause of deaths for police officers in 2020.
Not gun violence.
Not gun violence. That the cost of a hospital stay for COVID cost between $20,000 to $45,000, according to fairhealth.org, and some of the prolonged stays cost over $80,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just money. That's not the cost of the person's life. I mean, these are unacceptable costs, let alone the 700,000 people the U.S. has lost. It's just devastating. It's been a very tough year and a half for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hope people take this seriously, that we just want to keep people safe. We've lost 49 people in Franklin. And it's a serious thing.
It is. And from what I understand of the 49, most of them were pre-vaccine availability, so they had no choice at that point. So we lost them. And losing anyone is a significant problem.
Mm-hmm.
But then to lose some after the vaccine was available, that's still a significant problem. So we're in it for a while. I'm certainly not a medical expert, but, you know, health is first, and without health, we can't do much else. So.
Oh, I don't think so. But I just don't want to be, I would rather be safer and then be sorry.
So shifting to another kind of broad question, what are three important actions you believe are needed to move Franklin forward?
So when I've read this question about 10 times, I think this question is about how can we do things differently in Franklin so we don't stagnate?
Hmm.
And there's a few things. So I think we need new people elected on boards. We need new eyes, new knowledge, new ideas, and the willingness to work with the council and the residents and to explain some decisions that are made, and not just dismiss us or the people, the residents of the town. We really need to think about electing people who want to work together as a team and move forward. Is not going to be easy. So we have to do it together towards a goal to get it done. So new, I think two is new zoning about land use to encourage innovative development. We need to allow for more housing. You know, it was just, I think I was the most excited person in the room when we got to vote to save the open space of Maple Hill. I mean,
yeah.
I was like, couldn't sit still.
Jumping in your seat.
Yes, yes. And so saving open space is very important, but also we need to remember that we need new growth and we need property taxes to fund the budget. So we need, I'm like trying to think of the word.
Yeah, the right mix of growth.
We need yes, thank you. That's exactly what I meant. We need the right mix of growth. Because we do need growth, or we won't have any money to fund the schools and the things we want to do, which brings me right into number three, which is to fund the schools, arts, and culture. Now, I think we all should be disturbed that 75% of the communities in Massachusetts pay more per student than Franklin. The children in our community are our future, and I think we should do better for them. And I don't have a child in the school. These are my kids because they're in my town.
Right.
Arts and culture are very important for quality of life. I mean, look at the recent Community Unity FCC event we just had. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. People want more events like this. Events like this help us educate people about other people, about our differences, and that understanding brings the community together. It makes it easier to work as a team and to get the hard stuff done.
Mm-hmm. So the last of the five kind of standard questions should be a layup. So what experience or background will help you to serve in this role? Or what do you bring to the table that helps set you apart from the others?
Well, you know, questions like this always kind of make me uncomfortable. I don't really like to talk about myself or toot my own horn. But I'm going to try. Okay. So I'm not, because I've already been on the council, it took me the first term, I think, to learn the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
And this second term, I think we've really done a lot of good work on the economic development subcommittee that I chair. We kept meeting and we were on TV and people saw everything we did.
Mm-hmm.
We brought people in to just talk about what was going on. So I feel like my strengths for this position come from my ability to create safe zones so people can ask questions and express opinions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to study facts. I digest them. I make educated decisions. I like to build teams, build consensus, find commonalities. I want to build trust with the community. I'm not a policy wonk, nor do I have tons of experience in municipal government. But I find that I'm pretty reasonable and I can stay calm. I don't rant and waste time. I try to stay focused on the issue on the agenda. But I feel that my main job as a counselor is to do what is best for the 33,000 plus people in Franklin after removing myself from the equation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And then the final question is specific to the council, and certainly you're aware, as you have approved the annual budget, which in turn sets the priorities for how Franklin operates. How do you see the financial priorities that we should address? And I think you've alluded to some of those in your earlier answers. And how would you explain to the voters and residents why you would vote that way?
Well, it's kind of funny that I already talked about it, but I think there's a couple of things that there's just so much information that I want to let people know. But first, the town council follows the fiscal policies that were just updated in 2019 to really decide how we spend our money. You know, we just voted recently, I think it was in September, to add a 19th policy. So there's a budget stabilization policy now, and this excellent idea came from the FinCom.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to have 2% of the budget set aside to fund general fund operating budget shortfalls. By the time the town council budget hearings take place, usually in May, the budget has gone through teams of experts, and it's a really long process. I recommend people start to tune into the FinCom meetings. I believe there's one October 13th at 6:30. There's once a month they'll meet. I don't know when this will be on air, but I think people should really take the time to listen to those meetings. And that's where the details of the budgets are discussed. I think we're going to find that our revenue does not cover the cost of providing all the services that we're used to. And we're going to have to decide how to fund or what to cut. And it's not an easy business. I mean, these are the difficult decisions we have to make all the time. And that's why we need to be a team. And that's why we need to be united to do what's best for Franklin.
Thank you for that. Yeah, and in my reporting, I follow the FinCom to the extent that I can follow the money effectively. And FinCom, for those who may not be aware, effectively it's a separate body focused on the finance and the departmental budgets as an arm of the town council. It doesn't sit anywhere else in the structure. It's your assistance getting into the details, getting into the weeds, mm-hmm. with each of the departmental budgets, finding out what goes in, what goes out, what drives, what does this, how does it do that. So yeah, from my own perspective, reporting for the last 15 plus years, I find out an awful lot of detail in the FinCom meetings. And by the time it gets to the town council, respectfully, there's some sound bites, yes or no questions, things of that sort.
Exactly.
But you need to understand the details, and that's in the finance committee meetings.
Yes.
Which now, at least, they've established a much more regular routine. So, yeah, I think it's the second Wednesday, offsetting the town council. So it's on a Wednesday night, like council, but yep. Council generally is first and third, FinCom being the second Wednesday. And they tend to start a little bit earlier, so maybe 6 to 6:30. But
yep.
Again, the town calendar at franklinmass.gov is where to go to get. And you can sign up for updates and alerts to find out when the meetings are, et cetera, et cetera. Never mind staying tuned to Franklin Matters and franklin.news. I'll put that plug in there while we're at it.
Well, you know, I saw you on all the FinCom meetings in the past year, that most of them were remote. And I was on the budget subcommittee, but I feel like they do the brunt of the work.
Hmm.
They do all the hard stuff. And it's very interesting to just sit back and listen to them. And it gives you a different perspective.
It does.
And that's what we need. We need different opinions. We need different perspectives. We need people to accept these things and think about them instead of just dismissing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's no easy answers. I know there's an awful lot of discussion around, you know, should we have a third ambulance? Well, a third ambulance requires, at least from the last conversations with the chief, 10 people to staff it.
Yeah,
10 people's a lot of money. And to put that in the budget, where's that going to come from?
Right? Yeah, I think you just brought up a really good point because, you know, the chief of police and the fire chief have done an amazing job keeping their budget what it is and mm-hmm. getting the most amount of people that they can to service us.
Right.
And we know that they still don't have enough people.
Yep. Yeah. They're below other standards per population, per capita.
Yes.
Right. Akin to, and it's amazing, and you mentioned earlier the schools and their budget systemic
issues. Mm-hmm. The teachers in the department and the district do an amazing job with what they do have. And it's one of the reasons why I'm still doing what I'm doing here, because the education I know my daughter's got, those programs still are not here. They're not on the radar. Right. And I understand some of the pieces that they're going to need to bring back are like additional guidance and counseling because of COVID, but it was coming anyway because of the other situations that were going on. But where are the other languages? Where are the other art programs? Those are discussions we need to have, and again, in a civil discourse.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, we have to, the town has to have a balanced budget. I mean, that's one of the finance, that's one of the policies. We don't put off till next year.
Right.
So we do have to, we can only spend the money that we bring in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it gets difficult. And that's like the school committee budget subcommittee, they have to decide.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the heads of all the departments, they've been talking about the next fiscal year as soon as this one started.
Sure. Yeah.
Right, so July to December, they're arguing, like, what should we, do we need, like, what can we live without?
Mm-hmm.
I think is, and to put these people that have done so much for us, especially this past 2 years,
right.
You know, through this stress.
Right.
How do we keep the same level of service with less?
Mm-hmm.
With less funds. I think it's just not it's just not okay.
Yeah.
To put it simply.
Not a sustainable model.
Not a sustainable model, and it is not an easy thing to talk about.
Mm-hmm. So, having completed the six questions and covered and solved half the world's problems while we were at it, is there something else that you'd like to leave with the voters and residents to know from you in advance of the November 2nd election?
You know, I was thinking about this. I think I probably have already said everything, but I just wanted to thank people, if they're still listening, just thank them for listening. And thank you for considering voting for me on November 2nd or on the mail-in ballot or in early voting. I think it's wonderful that we have so many different ways to vote. And hopefully we will be above 20%. I would like, if we're at 35%, I will be very excited.
Hmm. I really would wish to be more like a 50-60%.
Okay.
For right, well, a state type election, but you know, I'm not a forecaster. I'm a reporter. I like
I
to go.
Say,
what?
Say, well, I would like that too, but I wasn't going to reach for the stars yeah, like I usually yeah. do.
But I think significantly, if we don't hit into that, then we really have to look at why, because it has always been well the wrong day, the wrong time, wrong priority. If now we've made it so easy. With the early voting during office hours and on a weekend and vote by mail, what else do we need to do? That's going to be the other question.
Yeah.
So hopefully people will turn out in volume and we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's because they don't know why it matters. You know, people don't have the time to take to find out why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about before I bought the Agway, changed jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the train every day going
sure.
into Boston. It's
yeah.
2 hours.
Hour
you know,
one way, an hour
hours.
Back.
Then
if
I would,
it was running on schedule.
Yeah, and then I would walk, you know, from Ruggles to the hospital area. But I mean, it's a lot of work. If you have kids, it's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we have to. How do we get to people so that they can understand? I think your podcasts and your recordings, speaking with Tom, you know, the quarterbacking sessions,
mm-hmm.
I think those help people. We just have to help them find it or help them understand. And it's not an easy thing. We don't have all day.
We don't have all day. If we had that silver bullet answer,
we would have used it already.
We would use it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's like, give me the handbook and I'll read it and I'll let you know what
right.
we're supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you again for taking time to share And we hope that we certainly wish you the best of luck, and we hope everybody else certainly gets out to vote and or reaches out to find out additional questions and answers before then.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to talk to anyone. You know, it's just, I think you can find me. You can find me on, you can email me. My home email is mjhamblin@verizon.net. I have a Facebook page, but I'm around.
Yep, you're around. And for those who are listening, trying to scramble on a piece of paper, we'll put those links in the show notes, so that'll make it easy for you.
You can put my Facebook on there, too, if you want. Yeah,
indeed.
Excellent. Thank you again. It was fun.
Good. I'm glad you had some fun, because that's one of the key reasons why I do this. It's fun.
Okay.
Because Franklin matters.
Definitely.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.